Valajärvi, Finland. It is spring, hunting season. As the weather warms and the bodies of frozen zombies begin to reanimate, elements of the UN N4, Northern Force, have arrived for their annual sweep and clear. Every year, the undead's numbers dwindle. At current trends, this area is expected to be completely secure within a decade. Travis D'Ambrosia, Supreme Allied Commander Europe, is here to personally oversee operations. There is a softness to the General's voice, a sadness. Throughout our interview, he struggles to maintain eye contact. I won't deny mistakes were made. I won't deny we could have been better prepared. I'll be the first one to admit that we let the American people down. I just want the American people to know why. What if the Israelis are right? Those were the first words out of the chairman's mouth the morning after Israel's UN declaration. I'm not saying they are, he made sure to stress that point. I'm just saying, what if? He wanted candid, not canned, opinions. He was that type of man, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. He kept the conversation hypothetical, indulging in the fantasy that this was just some intellectual exercise. After all, if the rest of the world wasn't ready to believe something so outrageous, why should the men and women in this room? We kept up with the charade as long as we could, speaking with a smile or punctuating with a joke. I'm not sure when the transition happened. It was so subtle, I don't think anyone even noticed. But suddenly you had a room full of military professionals, each one with decades of combat experience and more academic training than the average civilian brain surgeon, and all of us speaking openly and honestly about the possible threat of walking corpses. It was like a dam breaking. The taboo was shattered, and the truth just started flooding out. It was liberating.
So you had had your own private suspicions?
For months before the Israeli declaration. So had the chairman. Everyone in that room had heard something or suspected something.
Had any of you read the Wormbrunn Night Report?
No, none of us. I had heard the name, but had no idea about its content. I actually got my hands on a copy about 2 years after the Great Panic. Most of its military measures were almost line for line in step with our own.
Your own what?
Our proposal to the White House. We outlined a fully comprehensive program, not only to eliminate the threat within the United States, but to roll back and contain it throughout the entire world.
What happened?
The White House loved Phase One. It was cheap, fast, and, if executed properly, 100% covert. Phase One involved the insertion of special forces units into infested areas. Their orders were to investigate, isolate, and eliminate.
Eliminate?
With extreme prejudice.
Those were the Alpha teams?
Yes, sir. And they were extremely successful. Even though their battle record is sealed for the next 140 years, I can say that it remains one of the most outstanding moments in the history of America's elite warriors.
So what went wrong?
Nothing, with Phase One. But the Alpha teams were only supposed to be a stopgap measure. Their mission was never to extinguish the threat, only delay it long enough to buy time for Phase Two.
But Phase Two was never completed.
Never even begun. And herein lies the reason why the American military was caught so shamefully unprepared. Phase Two required a massive national undertaking, the likes of which hadn't been seen since the darkest days of the Second World War. That kind of effort requires Herculean amounts of both national treasure and national support, both of which by that point were non-existent. The American people had just been through a very long and bloody conflict. They were tired. They'd had enough. Like the 1970s, the pendulum was swinging from a militant stance to a very resentful one. In totalitarian regimes, communism, fascism, religious fundamentalism, popular support is a given. You can start wars, you can prolong them, You can put anyone in uniform for any length of time without ever having to worry about the slightest political backlash. In a democracy, the polar opposite is true. Public support must be husbanded as a finite national resource. It must be spent wisely, sparingly, and with the greatest return on your investment. America is especially sensitive to war weariness, and nothing brings on a backlash like the perception of defeat. I say perception, because America is a very all-or-nothing society. We like the big win, the touchdown, the knockout in the first round. We like to know, and for everyone else to know, that our victory wasn't only uncontested, it was positively devastating. If not, well, look at where we were before the panic. We didn't lose the last brush fire conflict, far from it. We actually accomplished a very difficult task, with very few resources and under extremely unfavorable circumstances. We won. But the public didn't see it that way, because it wasn't the blitzkrieg smackdown that our national spirit demanded. Too much time had gone by, too much money had been spent, too many lives had been lost or irrevocably damaged. We'd not only squandered all our public support, we were deeply in the red. Think about just the dollar value of Phase 2. Do you know the price tag of putting just one American citizen in uniform? And I don't just mean the time that he's actively in that uniform. The training, the equipment, the food, the housing, the transport, the medical care. I'm talking about the long-term dollar value that the country, the American taxpayer, has to shell out to that person for the rest of their natural life. This is a crushing financial burden, and in those days, we barely had enough funding to maintain what we had. Even if the coffers hadn't been empty, if we'd had all the money to make all the uniforms we needed to implement Phase 2, who do you think we could have conned into filling them? This goes to the heart of America's war weariness. As if the traditional horrors weren't bad enough, the dead, the disfigured, the psychologically destroyed, now you had a whole new breed of difficulties. The betrayed. We were a volunteer army, and look what happened to our volunteers. How many stories do you remember about some soldier who had his term of service extended, or some ex-reservist who, after 10 years of civilian life, suddenly found himself recalled into active duty? How many weekend warriors lost their jobs or houses? How many came back to ruined lives, or worse, didn't come back at all? Americans are an honest people. We expect a fair deal. I know that a lot of other cultures used to think that was naive and even childish, but it's one of our most sacred principles. To see Uncle Sam going back on his word, revoking people's private lives, revoking their freedom. After Vietnam, when I was a young platoon leader in West Germany, we'd had to institute an incentives program just to keep our soldiers from going AWOL. After this last war, no amount of incentives could fill our depleted ranks. No payment bonuses or term reductions or online recruiting tools disguised as civilian video games. Note 1. Before the war, an online shooter game, known as America's Army, was made available free of charge by the U.S. government to the general public. Some have alleged to entice new recruits. End note. This generation had had enough, and that's why when the undead began to devour our country, we were almost too weak and vulnerable to stop them. I'm not blaming the civilian leadership, and I'm not suggesting that we, in uniform, should be anything but beholden to them. This is our system, and it's the best in the world, but it must be protected and defended, and it must never again be so abused.